At daylight, Jay had slung his carbine over his shoulder and walked a short distance from his foxhole to relieve himself. As he stepped over a log, his foot came down squarely on the back of a Japanese lying in hiding. Jay reacted instantly, and so did the enemy soldier. Jay brought his carbine to bear on the Japanese's chest as the latter sprang to his feet. Jay pulled the trigger. Click. The firing pin was broken, and the carbine didn't fire. As the enemy soldier pulled the pin from a hand grenade, Jay threw the carbine at him. It was more an act of desperation than anything else. As Jay spun around and ran back toward us, yelling, "Shoot him!" the Japanese threw his grenade, striking my friend in the middle of the back. It fell to the deck and lay there, a dud. The Japanese then drew his bayonet. Waving it like a sword, he took off after Jay at a dead run. Jay had spotted a BAR man and fled in his direction, yelling for him to shoot the enemy. The BAR man stood up, but didn't fire. The Japanese came on. Jay was running and yelling as hard as he could. After agonizing moments, the BAR man took deliberate aim at the enemy soldier's belt buckle and fired most of a 20-round magazine into him. The soldier collapsed in a heap. The blast of automatic fire had cut his body nearly in two. Terrified and winded, Jay had had a close call. When he asked the BAR man why in the hell he had waited so long to fire, that character grinned. I heard him reply something to the effect that he thought he'd just let the Japanese get a little closer to see if he could cut him into two pieces with his BAR. Jay obviously didn't appreciate his close call being used as the subject of an experiment. As all the men laughed, Jay received permission to go back to battalion headquarters to draw a clean pair of trousers. The men kidded him a great deal about the episode, and he took it all with his usual good nature. During the entire period among the Umar-Broghol ridges, a nuisance Marine infantrymen had to contend with was the rear echelon souvenir hunters. These characters came up to the rifle companies during lulls in the fighting and poked around for any Japanese equipment they could carry off. They were easy to spot because of the striking difference between their appearance and that of the infantry. During the latter phase of the campaign, the typical infantryman wore a worried, haggard expression on his filthy, unshaven face. His bloodshot eyes were hollow and vacant from too much horror and too little sleep. His camouflaged helmet cover, if it hadn't been torn off against the rocks, was gray with coral dust and had a tear or two in it. His cotton dungaree jacket, originally green, was discolored with coral dust, filthy, greasy with rifle oil, and as stiff as canvas from being soaked, alternately with rain and sweat, and then drying. His elbows might be out, and his knees frequently were, from much hitting the deck on the coral rock. His boondockers were coated with gray coral dust, and his heels were worn off completely by the sharp coral. The infantryman's calloused hands were nearly blackened by weeks of accumulation of rifle oil, mosquito repellent, an oily liquid called scat, dirt, dust, and general filth. Overall, he was stooped and bent by general fatigue and excessive physical exertion. If approached closely enough for conversation, he smelled bad. The frontline infantry bitterly resented the souvenir hunters. One major in the 7th Marines made it a practice of putting them into the line if they came into his area. His infantrymen saw to it that the visitors stayed put until released to return to their respective units in the rear areas.